This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
You've reached the Every Little Thing helpline. Please leave your message after the tone.
Hi, my name is Silas, and I have a question about courtroom sketch artists. I was wondering why courtrooms even have them. Why not just snap a picture of the courtroom? So, sketch artists, why are they there?
Hello?
Hi, Silas. It's Flora from ELT.
Hi, Flora.
Do you have a Bible handy?
A Bible? I have a kid's Bible next to me.
That'll do.
Okay. This is a lift the flap Bible, by the way, for Noah's Ark.
Keep those flaps down for now, please.
Okay.
Please put your hand on the children's Bible and repeat after me.
Okay.
I, Silas, am ELT's number one fan.
I, Silas, am ELT's number one fan.
And I do solemnly swear.
And I do solemnly swear.
This indeed is a factual emergency.
This indeed is a factual emergency.
Thank you. You may be seated.
Okay. Putting up the Lift the Flap Bible.
How did this question come to you? Do you have a passion for the courtroom? Are you like a Judge Judy junkie?
Honestly, I have just been watching shows with courtrooms, and that's what made me wonder about courtroom sketch artists. I'm like, why not just take a picture?
Okay, Silas, will you state your question for the record, please?
Yes. Why do courtrooms need sketch artists?
Oh, it's a great question.
Ooh.
Silas, I want to introduce you to Thomas Doherty.
Hi, Silas.
Hi, Thomas.
Thomas is a media historian, and he has deliberated your inquiry.
Our age today is so photographic. Why do we have to rely on this primitive pre-photography form to render the reality of a courtroom?
Yes, exactly. I think he gets my point. It seems so stupid.
So before cameras existed, artists were sketching in courtrooms, but the question is, why didn't they retire their pastels when photography came along?
Yeah.
To crack this case, we have to go back to a memorable moment in true crime.
Basically, it's because of a criminal trial in 1935. It was called the Trial of the Century.
The Trial of the Century.
Ooh.
This trial that would etch out a permanent place for sketch artists involved a crime against one of the most beloved celebrities of the day, Charles Lindbergh. Lindbergh's claim to fame was that at 25 years old, he was the first aviator to make a solo nonstop flight across the Atlantic Ocean.
Okay, yes. That sounds familiar.
It took him 33 and a half hours, and this trip knocked people's stockings off.
People have been trying to do this for several years, so nobody believed that this feat could happen, and it certainly couldn't happen by one lone 25-year-old kid.
There he goes, soaring off in his Spirit of St. Louis, the Lone Eagle.
I don't think it's too much of an exaggeration to say that most of the country just fell in love with this guy.
33 hours later in Paris, the most acclaimed man of his day and age, a boyish figure who charmed the imagination of the world.
He becomes the most famous, beloved, admired man of the age.
Wow.
Lindbergh is significantly less admired a few years later when he becomes a loud, proud Nazi sympathizer.
Oh, no.
But before that, people thought of him as an all-American hero. And in 1932, while Lindbergh is still in his glory days, his 20-month-old son was kidnapped. And the case captivated the nation.
A message that made every parent shudder and that brings into instant action the entire facilities of the nation.
It's one of the first electric bolts of the modern media age. This truly shocked people. The notion that somebody would kidnap Lindbergh's baby just seemed off the charts. People felt it in their bones.
Not a single bet is overlooked, not a single suspicion unverified in the search for the most famous baby in the world. Innocent, led, 20 months old son of the Lone Eagle.
The police eventually identified a suspect, a German man named Bruno Richard Hauptmann, and his trial began in 1935.
And it's a mob scene. Every reporter in the country wants a byline, so all the big names of the time came.
There were newspaper reporters, radio journalists, and this was before TV, but there were also people filming for newsreels.
The newsreels would film an event, edit the film, and then the films would be played in motion picture theaters around the country.
So there was a huge media presence at this trial, and that worried the judge.
The judge, very old school guy, he wants the courtroom to be a model of American jurisprudence and decorum. So he bans photographers from the courtroom, that is, still photographers.
But the judge ruled in favor of newsreel cameras, though he did have some stipulations.
And the deal he makes is this. You can cover the trial, but you cannot cover any actual testimony in the courtroom. When I am officiating from the bench, the cameras go off. And if a witness is testifying, the cameras go off.
Basically, he says, you can only record in between the important things.
That's so dumb. Then you get nothing.
I know. It doesn't make a lot of sense. And the camera people agreed. So they solemnly swore to keep the cameras off, but they must have had their fingers crossed.
When some of the truly dramatic testimony happens, they find this too irresistible not to record. So they secretly turn on the camera that they pledged to keep off.
Ooh.
And they caught a couple of huge moments on film, including a heated exchange between the accused kidnapper and the prosecutor.
There's a blistering cross-examination. It gets very nasty. Hauptmann is arrogant and snarky.
And the camera people package this up and release it in the theaters.
These tense scenes actually filmed inside the courthouse show the concluding evidence in this gripping drama of real life. Now listen to the searching cross-examination.
When you kidnapped, did you lie to him or did you tell him the truth? Did you lie to him or did you tell him the truth?
I said not the truth.
You lied, didn't you?
I did, yes.
During the cross-examination, Hauptmann contradicts himself.
This is the climax moment of the trial of the century. Of course, people want to see these newsreels.
And they cause a sensation. There's one account of one theater. They're playing these shows from 10 in the morning to 12 midnight, hour shows, hour on the hour. And they're filling the theater, 600 people, each show.
Wow.
And we always have to remember that the cameraman said they wouldn't do this.
So, as you can imagine, this did not go over so well back at the courthouse.
The district attorney and the judge go ballistic when they find the newsreels have reneged on their deal. They absolutely scream.
So the judge kicked the newsreel cameras out, but it was too late.
This trial has been sensationalized. And while the jury is deliberating in the case, there's like a mob of people outside the courtroom waiting for the verdict to come in. And they are screaming, kill Hauptmann, kill the German, as the jury is deliberating.
Oh my gosh, that's scary.
Yeah. So the American Bar Association got involved. They saw the trial as a media circus and started calling for reform. And ultimately, they adopted a new rule.
Which says, cameras and broadcasting should not be in the courtroom. And what we want in the American justice system is calm, deliberation. We don't want people playing to emotion. We don't want them playing to the cameras. We want proper decorum in the American courtroom. So that basically kicks cameras out of the courtroom for decades.
For decades.
Today, it's a little more complicated. Most state courts do permit cameras depending on the jurisdiction and the judge. But in most federal courts, cameras are still not allowed.
Gotcha. Okay.
So this is where courtroom sketch artists really get drawn in. In cases where cameras are inadmissible, the only way to get an image of a trial is to have a person draw it.
So this is their big break for these artists to come out of the woodwork.
Yeah, and we're going to meet one of those artists after a short recess.
every trial I cover is a big trial because those are the only ones that the news stations want to cover. You know, like Leona Helmsley and Martha Stewart and Imelda Marcos and Harvey Weinstein, Gotti, Vinny the Chin Gigante, the...
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
Order, order. I feel like saying hear ye, but I feel like that's not the right...
That's a little British sounding.
Let's resume our case. So where cameras are outlawed, newspapers, TV stations, wire services hire artists to go into courtrooms and draw scenes from the trial. Can you describe courtroom sketches? What kind of art do they remind you of?
They remind me of not like goofy caricature drawings, but more like colored pencils that are very, very beautiful. And there's got to be someone in the picture with their hand stretched out pointing.
Yeah, that's a classic trope of courtroom sketch art. Someone has got to be pointing. Okay, so how do courtroom artists put these points to paper?
Yeah.
We found an expert to sketch out an answer.
Okay, I'm Christine Cornell. I'm a courtroom artist. I've been covering trials since 1975. I started straight out of art school when I was 21.
Oh my gosh, 1975. That's a long time.
And she has amassed a huge collection of drawings.
Oh, I have three rooms with floor-to-ceiling architect's drawers full of drawings. Tens of thousands, I'm imagining.
Tens of thousands?
Yeah, it's like I'm buried alive. Like that dung beetle, I can't go anywhere because I have to push this mass in front of me.
Oh my gosh. I bet she's seen some crazy cases.
Yeah, it's like a who's who of who's wearing orange.
You know, like Leona Helmsley and Martha Stewart and Imelda Marcos and Harvey Weinstein, Gotti, Vinny the Chin Gigante, the Commission Trial, the Pizza Connection.
Christine's Berkowitz. Sketching rap sheet is a mile long.
Sam,
wow.
44 caliber killer.
Okay, Silas, let's talk about how a sketch is born.
Okay.
Christine lives in the New York City area, so when there's a high-profile case nearby, media outlets, mostly TV stations, will call her and ask her if she can cover the trial. And she doesn't always get a lot of lead time.
Oh, sometimes they say it's going to happen any minute. How fast can you go?
Oh my gosh. Wow.
When she rolls up, her first order of business is finding a good seat. Because unlike the official members of the court, she doesn't usually get one assigned to her. And here's what she's looking for.
I want to be able to have a good angle of the defendant. I try and figure out which side of the courtroom he's sitting on and then not sit directly behind him, but a little off to the side.
I'm wondering, like, is she sitting with this paper in her lap or does she have a stand?
Well, you've got to work in a very tight space. And so what I use as an easel is my portfolio. It's got a stiff piece of cardboard in it and it's propped on my lap at a slight angle up to the top of my backpack.
Christine also brings a couple hundred pastels, some blank pages, and one other important tool. Can you guess what it might be?
Binoculars? Is she zooming in on people?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
I just use regular birding binoculars.
Curious why.
It enables me to draw much quicker, and speed is everything. Especially in their subtlety of expression. If you're looking at somebody with binoculars, you can see, you know, some little fleeting thing go across their face and say, oh, I want that.
But as you can imagine, not every defendant enjoys having their fleeting expressions examined through binoculars.
I was drawing Martha Stewart at her first arraignment, and I am probably less than 10 feet away. But I'm using my binoculars because there's a lot of movement around her. You know, she's, you know, surrounded by attorneys. You can't see her clearly all the time. So I'm just making sure I can get everything I can get in this glimpse. And she notices me and she scowls. And then I see her kind of deliberately, you know, she whispers to her attorney, who moves forward to completely block our view of her. And so, you know, it was a bummer. So when court was over, I lingered a little bit so that I could speak to her. And I just told her that I wanted to apologize for making her uncomfortable, because the binoculars are really just a tool. I'm not gawking. I'm not trying to get too close. I'm just trying to do my job. And she looked me up and down. And she goes, perfect complexion, right? No blemishes, no flaws. And I said, absolutely. And she just turned on her heel, walked away.
Wow, was not expecting that response. Perfect complexion.
No blemishes, no flaws.
Yeah.
So subtlety of expression is one reason you might want to use binoculars. And then the other is she doesn't get a lot of time to see people.
You know, you're drawing an arraignment. And when the person comes out, you have 30 seconds to see their face, because then they turn their back to you. And then you see their face one more time when they're leaving the room. And that's all you had to draw them in. So you have to be completely zen focused.
Oh my gosh. I could never, ever in my life draw someone based off of 30 seconds of seeing their face.
Yeah, this is a special skill Christine has developed.
I stare at somebody hard. I'm really penetrating them with my eyes. And then I look at my page. Their face is floating like a ghosty figure right there on my page. And if I draw very fast, I can get about half of it and then it's disappeared. So then I need to see them one more time to get the rest of their face.
Wow. That's wild.
It's like speed portraiture.
Yes, that's a good name for it.
So during a typical trial, Christine is drawing 4 or 5 images a day. And she told us it's usually like a wide shot of the whole courtroom, a close-up of the defendant, maybe the witness, an attorney. And she's looking for dramatic scenes.
Mm.
She said one of the most memorable moments she's ever drawn was from the Bill Cosby trial.
Oh, wow.
There's this moment where the prosecutor was arguing that Cosby had access to a private jet, which made him a flight risk. So they wanted to revoke his bail.
And Cosby leapt to his feet and said about himself in third person, "He doesn't have his own plane, asshole." He said that to the prosecutor.
Oh my God.
And everybody who was in Cosby's, you know, entourage had also leapt to their feet, which means I'm sitting in the third row back and I can't see anything. So I had fun recreating it.
Wow. That's intense.
We sent you the picture.
Okay. Let me see.
And we'll put it on Instagram at ELT Show.
Oh. Wow.
There's a lot of action in this picture, right?
Yeah.
Like a football tackle. You know, that kind of drawing. Everything going at crazy angles. Arms waving. All that.
But a lot of emotion. She's good at, like, showing emotion on people's faces. Like, it looks like the judge is furious. He is saying, order, order.
Yeah, the judge is doing the hand thing. It's not a point, but he is doing a dramatic hand gesture.
Yeah.
You're just going to have to pick your moments and combine things. So, you know, all in all, you can tell the entire story in a drawing.
So at the end of the day, Christine photographs her pictures and then sends them to the news outlet that hired her. And sometimes she sees them later that night on TV.
If I like the work, I'm happy. You know, if I don't like the work, it's like, oh, too bad. But mostly I like my work.
Well, I think this case is closed.
Yeah. It sounded like this is just such a weird thing that happens, but now it makes so much sense. There's a very logical explanation, and glad we have them.
Before you go, will you raise your right hand and repeat after me?
Oh, yes. It is raised.
8.
8.
3.
3.
3.
3.
Ring.
Ring.
E-L-T.
E-L-T.
Court is adjourned.
Can I lower my right hand?
You may.
Okay, thank you.
This episode was produced by Kayla Stokes, Adley Robinson, Stephanie Werner, Bibi Flanagan, Annette Heist, and Flora Lichtman, with help from Doug Barron. Our editors were Jorge Just and Caitlin Kenny. Nicole Pasulka is our fact-checker. Scored by Dan Brunel, Emma Munger, Bobby Lord, and Dara Hirsch. Mixed by Dara Hirsch. Special thanks to the Critical Past Archive, British Pathé, and the Fox Archives. Every Little Thing is a Gimlet production and a Spotify original podcast. Don't judge me. Goodbye.